Evening, everyone. This is Gordon W2 Tango Tango Tango, and this is the Bergen Amateur Radio Association Technical Net. Are there any stations with emergency or priority traffic? Please call K2BAR W2TTT. That's the right answer to that question, in case anyone's interested. Alrighty. Good evening, everyone. Nice to hear everybody in tonight. I just want to make a quick check. Oh, excellent. It's amazing what happens when you fix stuff. Alrighty. This is kind of a special net tonight. This tech net is going to be dedicated to the memory of our former president, recent past president, Steve Mendelson, W2ML, was known as WA2DHF, in his former life, as it were, who passed away a few days ago after a long battle with cancer. Steve was kind enough to take my suggestion about having a technical net and worked on the idea of not whether we should, but whether as to how we could. And that's pretty much how Steve approached a lot of things. Even if he had an initial resistance or initial reluctance or concern, he always seemed to want to bring the best out of people around him and make for a more enjoyable and wonderful amateur radio experience. And I can tell you as a personal observation that Steve provided many, many people, including this person, with many, many wonderful opportunities to have fun and serve others through amateur radio. So we will miss him. We will have some announcements about the arrangements for him later on in the net. But let us get on with the subject at hand for the moment. The technical net is about amateur radio. It's about electricity, electronics, telecommunications, computers, things that use all these things. And how we operate, what we operate with, how could we operate better, lessons learned from when we didn't, and some of the fun experiences we've had as well. So technical net is kind of a broad term for stuff about and related to those who pursue amateur radio for whatever purpose. Alrighty, so we check into this net a little differently than we do other nets. This net is checked into by call sign group so as to add some minimal amount of sanity and order to the whole thing. So the way we do that is we will call for call sign groups, and you will check in with your call sign, your name, and you will indicate whether you have a question, comment, both, or none of the above. Now, if you don't have a question or a comment, you might ask, why the heck should you check in? And the answer to that question is, we need your participation so that we can tell whether or not we should be changing the focus of a subject or how we address a subject, or we might even ask you for your opinion about a subject. And I realize that may that thought or that possibility may be viewed as a threat, but it really is going back to the base principles of this net, and that is to have a conversation about things that interest us all. So we hope that you'll be willing to participate. Even if you are coming in without a question or a comment, please do check in. So, with no further ado, let's get on to the matter at hand. Call signs that begin with the call sign Kilo 2, in that order, please call K2BAR.
KD2, ADC, Ed in Huntington.
Good evening, Ed. Will you be adding questions or comments to the net tonight?
No, I'm just going to sit and listen there for a little bit there, Gordon. Go ahead.
Okay, very good, Ed. You always bring up good stuff, though, so it's kind of fishing for that. A lot of the guys are going to be at the wake tonight, and fortunately or unfortunately, I'm down at Jeremy's hockey game, and I'm missing the last part of the third game he's playing tonight. But my wife is here as well. My wife is here as well, so she's watching the end of the game, and then they'll be joining me in the vehicle. All right, any other kilos? How about November's? Okay. How about Alpha's? All right. Let's try Whiskey's.
W2JEK done. Possible comment.
W2KC. Jim, none of the above. Over.
Good evening, Jim. Good evening, Don. In reverse order. Who else? Now, there's somebody making a valiant effort to access this net via 2-meter FM, but boy, you're very weak. You want to try it again?
W2LCN, name is Rick. No questions, no comments. I'm heading out Route 80, so I'm very difficult trying to get the repeater.
Okay, Rick, are you coming toward the repeater, Rick?
Negative, I'm listening. I'm going to be heading away from the repeater, but as I come across the top of the hills, I'm able to get into it. But this is W2LCN, just listening.
That's Lima Charlie November, right?
Whiskey 2, LCN.
Yeah, I think it was Charlie. Okay. I thought so. First time I thought you said Tango, and then there were T. Then I thought it was Charlie. Okay, very good. Good to hear you. Very good. Any other stations?
N2OEL. Four questions.
Okay, Mr. Noel, good evening with your four questions. I have a topic, too, tonight that's I'm actually going to bring up probably ahead of yours, but it's an amazing, amazing thing to note. And I learned a new signature of pending doom that doesn't cost much to fix in an automobile. All right, anybody else?
KC2VMA, Marco, no questions or comments. Good evening, Gordon.
Good evening, Marco. You'll get a special chuckle out of my dilemma. That's been resolved. Any other?
W2CH, Ray and White Plains. Good evening, Gordon. Checking in. Nope, none of the above.
Okay, and what about the lovely Marilyn?
KC2NKU. Hi, Gordon. I'm coming along. Thank you for asking. No questions, no comments, and of course I'm here. Thank you for your compliment.
No problem. Good to hear you, Marilyn. Anybody else? Okay, was there another station that wanted to join us?
KC2UNH disconnected.
Well, whoops. KC2UNH. Well, log you in anyway. Well, that's another thing I didn't mention. You can log in via Echolink at K2FoxtrotJuliet-L. K2FoxtrotJuliet-L for Lima. And that works out very well as well. Any other stations on the Echolink? Alrighty. That's wonderful. All right. Well, I'm just kind of curious. Has anyone noticed any AC, or pardon me, any alternator wind on my signal? Good answer. Okay. Well, we solved another mystery recently. I have a pretty heavy voltage drop. Hold on. I think a 1-volt voltage drop on one radio when I transmit that I no longer, that used to be worse. And now it's solved. And it's solved because for the longest time my Linco radio was giving me trouble. It would not operate unless I ran the car engine. And when I transmitted, the voltage drop was just horrendous, absolutely horrendous. And I could actually tell by looking at the front panel. And other radios didn't have as much, but I did notice that that it was kind of on the high side. Well, recently now, I have discovered that I was having a little trouble turning over my car engine. It was like my starter was about to give up the ghost. It's a tragedy. 350,000 miles, and I'd like not to replace the starter. Well, it turns out I'm not going to have to replace the starter. The other night, flat out, I could not start the car at all. It just wouldn't go. And we played with it, we tried doing this and that. Got it to work, an auxiliary battery. But even that seems a little odd. And then I managed to get myself into a worse pickle. I couldn't even get home. So I thought I had solved the problem. And I had to call AAA, and they came, and they couldn't get it to start. But then, the guy was just playing with the terminals, and the terminal itself was nice and tight on the binding, close to the battery. The battery's new. He goes, I think you might have a defective battery, but all of a sudden, he said, I was messing with the wire, and all of a sudden, it came to life. And I have the type of clamps that grab a post and also grab the cable, a clamping mechanism. And what was happening was the corrosion inside the wiring itself, or among the strands, didn't give off any powder, but it was heavily oxidized. So that was the problem. With DC, you want a high cross-sectional area that's conducting your DC. And when you essentially insulate each strand from each other, you compromise that cross-sectional area. And lo and behold, that was the problem. So I just had to clean up the connections, and magically now my Elenco doesn't pull down the radio below 12 volts anymore, which is a wonderful thing. So my Elenco should work pretty well as well. So that's the end of my story. Anybody else want to give some stories about the... Oh, by the way, the car starts more reliably too, ha ha ha. Anybody want to give any stories related to batteries and cars and radio equipment and things like that? You know, not up to snuff on the connections. And what do people use on their terminals to, and in the stranded wire that we use in cars to keep the thing from corroding? What do people use?
This is Antonio.
Yeah, Noel.
I worked in the gas station for many years, and also at a GMC truck dealer for 3 years as a parts manager, and. The items you described that clamp onto the cable as well as the battery are emergency ends for when the thing breaks off or corrodes through the terminals. They're when you cannot get a new battery cable. Since they're defined emergency, you wouldn't want to use them more than a month or so because they're not meant to be used permanently. You're supposed to get the molded ones where the copper is molded into the lead. And
well, that's lovely. And then I have to run it down, I guess, to the starter motor or to the rest of the electrical system?
You go and measure them, and you go to an auto parts store, and you buy the new cable and put it in. And end the problem.
Or the starter hole is in a problem. Okay. Well, that's interesting. That's very, very interesting. I did not know that those were called that, but my local car battery shop, when they sold me a battery, they put one of those ends on.
I work for a high-class Shell station, and my boss would have shot me. Even when I was doing my own car, I got no end of grief by using those things. Of course, I was working at a gas station, so, like, well, they got corroded, I cleaned them and put some more grease on them.
Yeah, I'm going to look for something. I'm going to look for something that's more conductive. I'm going to place the cable. I'm unkeying a little bit here. But that makes it very good. Anybody else have any comments on this subject? Then we'll move on.
8280C.
Go ahead, Ed.
Yeah, I've done two things, actually. One is to actually just pin the ends of the cable before you put it into that connector. And the other thing I've done is there's a product called Penetrox, which you put on ground connections for, you know, when you're doing house wiring and stuff like that. And I've done both of them and actually had good results.
Using the aforementioned temporary connector.
That's correct.
Okay. So there is a solution. Certainly tinning it would be fine. I would probably have to open up the clamp again and, you know, break out the steel wool. Not the steel wool, I wouldn't use steel wool. You break out the sandpaper and really fan out those conductors and give them a nice, you know, scraping with some sandpaper. Which is what I did tonight, by the way. I mean, that's not what I did this morning. This morning it was about to rain, so I was quick and I got the job done. But then I went back and reestablished everything and used some sandpaper, some really coarse sandpaper. It was great. And I also did the metal work, too. I did that side. So I also noticed the clamp head, was even where the cable was supposed to lay, was largely, you'll love this, was largely painted. So other than a very narrow center part of the channel where the clamp came down, it was not very useful. I may look for a better temporary connector, but I hear you. In fact, Noel, I might actually look for a huge spheroidal solder lug and solder the solder lug to the cable. And instead of putting in a compression fitting, I might actually then just put it on a large spheroidal binding post ring type of thing. But we'll see. You have to have enough contact, enough you know, to hold to carry you know, 100 plus amps of starter motors. You have to think about that. All right, that was instructive. Anybody else?
William, I with your comment.
Tony, good evening. K2AMI, go ahead.
I don't know how much of a gimmick it is, but when last time I bought a battery down at Sears, it was a diehard battery, while they were installing it, I was looking around the department, limited order department they have down at the Sears shop, and they have two things. They have what looks like a soap washer, one red, one black, and it's impregnated with something, okay? And they recommend that you put this on the terminal and the battery first. It surrounds the battery and the terminal like a pad, and then you put the connection onto it. And also they had a spray that you spray the terminals with and spray the cable with. And I assume it's some kind of neutralizing material, but I don't know how valuable they are or whether they work, but I did it, and I've been pleased with it. So just check that out. It's a simple solution also.
Yeah, I've seen those. They did not install them this time, and I was kind of surprised, actually, when I went to look. But I can also say that the clamp that was grabbing the binding post was absolutely fine. There was no corrosion there. It was on the part where the metal clamp met the copper, you know, really finely braided stuff. And the individual strands, since it was finely braided, were compromised in their conductivity because they were insulated from each other. And so it really made it for a bad scene. But very good. Alrighty, anything else on this topic?
A comment, and that is, once when I got stuck, jumper guy, a mechanic of some type, recognized the problem, and he just poured club soda on the terminals, carbonated club soda, and it tended to clean off the terminals and restore a reasonable connection. Not just the moisture, but the something in the soda itself helped.
Yeah, you can use Diet Coke and Diet Pepsi, any of the sugarless carbonated drinks will do fine. Absolutely. Very good. Anybody else? There was somebody under Tony.
KC2VMA.
Marco, I knew you'd have something on this subject.
Yeah, you can also try it on the battery terminals because I have the, you know, because I have the 2-meter radio directly connected to it with eyelet terminals directly to the battery, and I've had a lot of success with actually just spraying WD-40, any kind of lubricant on the battery terminals, and everything exposed to what connection you have to the radio itself, to the battery. Wheel grease, any of those things. I've had a lot of success with that. It doesn't produce or create any, you know, because sometimes the battery itself leaks out from the terminals there and it gets oxidized and all that. But you could try any of those lubricants and even like just don't be shy to put grease on the terminals as much as possible so it doesn't really harm anything. And it does a good job of protecting the terminals so it doesn't break off or anything like that. Even the terminals that you're connecting the radio to the battery itself. So that's, I have pretty much a lot of grease all over the battery terminals and the connections to the radio to the battery. And it works out fine there. And it keeps them very protected and all that. Back to net control.
Yeah, to your point about the WD-40, WD-40 is water displacement. That's what the WD stands for. So that makes sense. And I've used other greases as well. I just don't like a lot of greasy crud around my connections. But when I've had to absolutely have a reasonably watertight connection, and temperature hasn't been in terribly much of an issue, i.e. it's not going to melt off the grease or whatever, I've used high temperature conductive greases, and that works out pretty well. So conductive greases are not a bad idea either. Again, you don't want to create any points where you're not getting a good firm grip, as it were. All right, in a little bit I'm going to switch radios, and we're going to see if by any chance that's got any of the remaining AC, not AC, but the alternator wind or things like that going. This is excellent. All right, anybody else have a comment?
KD280C comment.
Ed, go right ahead.
Yeah, just as a point of interest, WD-40 is not a lubricant. What happens actually is once the solvent volatilizes, it actually becomes sticky.
It certainly does. It does. But what it does do, it does keep moisture from getting onto the metal or material.
Oh, absolutely. That's what it was designed for. A lot of people use it just as a lubricant. And actually, I had one bad experience with that. I did lubricate an accelerator line with it, and lo and behold, it was on the wife's car. And during the winter time, she came home in a panic because the accelerator stuck.
Yeah, that'll be good. So I've switched radios. Hopefully you're not hearing anything negative. Maybe it's a little punchier audio.
Yeah, there's a hum in the background.
All right, we'll have to find out where that hum's coming from. All right, not a problem. This radio still has the hum thing going, but all right, that's good to know. In any case, I'm real happy that at least the radio is able to hold its voltage now. Gee, it's amazing what happens when you don't have a huge voltage drop in the battery terminal. So the signature for impending doom is when you have low voltage at your radios, especially at high current mode like transmit, in the out periods, you are likely to have a situation where you're going to ultimately have trouble getting power to the starter. By the way, there's a 60 amp fuse coming from the battery to the ham gear here. It's one of those large, golden connect and brass kind of, steroidal bus fuses. It's a 60 amp job. And I blew that last night as part of this exercise. So right now, I've just got the two parts of the fuse contacts taped together under the hood. And I'm running low power, so I'm not terribly worried about it. But I am noting that could be the cause of the hum, because it's just not a great contact. Just jam the two ends of the fuse connector together and just tape it over.
Yeah, is your car engine running right now?
Yes, it is.
All right, next time you transmit, just hit the accelerator. Let's see if the frequency of the wind goes up and down.
All right, so here it is, and I'll just here's up, down, up, down, up, down.
Yes, most certainly.
And yet the other radios in the rack from a different manufacturer don't have this problem. And they don't have, like, filters or anything on them. They're all Chinese radios. The Olenco is one, and then the TYTs. Alrighty, well, why don't we move on, unless there's really a lot of interest in this topic. We can move on. Anybody else? Okay, so the object lesson is, if your radios start to have voltage drop issues, know that you need to get on that case and figure it out, because within a couple of months, you may have starter issues if it's at the, it's at the source battery contact. And it's very hard to see. I mean, it was all inside the wires, among the strands of a very fine, very expensive, you know, multi-strand cable. Alrighty, so Don, you had a comment, and then Tony, I'm going to assume you have an answer that you'd probably like to make. And then we will go to other check-ins, and then we will go to Noel's questions, and then any other buddy else's questions. So let's do it that way. W2JEK, KQBAR, W2TTT.
Okay, KQBAR, the group, W2JEK, good evening all. Just announcing that our next test session, testing will be at 8 o'clock in the morning at the Hamfest, which will be on June 2nd. Also have one on the 15th of June, which is 7 p.m. on a Friday night. That will also be at the high school. With that, back to net, W2JEK.
Thank you, Don. Anybody have any questions for Don? I do need to emphasize that the Hamfest is not this Saturday. As originally scheduled, it was scheduled for this Saturday, Memorial Day weekend, but because of a sports event that has been rapidly organized for the high school where the Hamfest is to be, we have been put off 1 week to June 2nd, as Don intimated. So please note that there is no Hamfest, no Barry Hamfest this weekend. It is next weekend. Anybody else have questions on this point? Alrighty, thank you, Don. Any more you want to add?
Nothing else at this time, thanks.
Very good. Tony, I think you've got some club announcements, some personal announcements, yes? Maybe he doesn't. Okay, well, I'll make the announcements. As you might have heard during our net opening tonight, we are mourning the passing of our good friend, Steve Mendelson, W2ML, XWA2DHF. He's our club most recent past president, and unfortunately he has gone to a better place for him, and we'll miss him greatly. He is being waked tomorrow afternoon and Saturday evening. I say again, tomorrow afternoon and Saturday evening at the funeral parlor that's up on Kindertramack Road, up, I think that's in actually Oradell, Breslinian, or I forget what it is anyway, Walter or something or other. But anyway, it's a relatively new funeral home, last few years. And if you need information about that, you can send a request to w2ttt@peterborough.net, and I'll forward you the club announcement. I believe the funeral is going to be Sunday, and I don't have all the details at the top of my head, but again, that's the plan for now. Anyway, Steve will be greatly missed. You know, many of us have had such wonderful experiences because of Steve, and not to mention the opportunity to share his good humor, his grumpiness. I always kind of chuckled when he got grumpy, so it's kind of fun. I'm going to miss him a lot. He's been a very good friend to yours truly for going on four decades. So, you know, it's a problem. It's a problem when you have a hole like that. And as I said in the opening, it's, you know, over 5 years ago, the subject of this net came up, and some folks said, man, I don't know, blah, blah, blah. Steve said, yeah,
why not? Maybe we can figure a way to do it. And, you know, since I had come up with a suggested day of the week, i.e. one where we didn't have another net at the time, it was a winner, and off we went. So it's been fun. It's over 5 years now. So anyway, we'll get around to that if you'd like later on. But before we move on to Noel's questions, I just want to know if there are any stations would like to join us, and we'll take your questions after Noel's. But if you'd like, if you have questions or comments, please come in now. K2BAR. Alrighty, well, thank you. Noel, we're looking forward with bated breath to your questions, sir. K2BAR, WTTTT.
Okay, quick aside here. Factory-made cables at Advanced Auto Parts. I don't know what your truck is, so I looked for my 1992 Econoline E50. 669 for my plus one, and the black one, the long one, is 1509. And these are factory made. Good quality. As opposed to do it yourself. Okay, back to my question. Recently, at Portable Day, Mr. Joyce, Jim Joyce, K2ZO, had a nice antenna up. It was an offset dipole, as fed at the conventional one-third, two-thirds point. So one-third antenna was one side, the other. Pretty decent antenna, except he had it for 40 meters, so I got 40, 20, and 10. Didn't get 15. So with the phasers and stuff, he actually put a 15-meter offset dipole and hung it underneath, about a foot or so, and it worked very well. Well, in the Yahoo group that specialized in offset dipoles, there was a discussion and some charts and this and that about instead of feeding it at the 33% point, feed it at the 40% point. Get a little higher SWR, maybe up to 3 to 1 on 40 and 20, but 15 is really decent. So you got one wire up there. Mr. Joyce has chosen to drive his with the 300 ohm cable from the wireman. He brings it down to a 401 bound, which is hooked up. Well, actually, he had it hanging underneath the shelter, and at that point, he had a few feet of a really good quality, RG8 type or LMR 400 or 600, whatever it was. And the whole thing worked like gangbusters. So the question that I have is, people, and I said, well, you know, how does it work? And he said, it's relatively flat. Once I set it on the tuner, I have a nice broad one, so I'm not too far off. I didn't measure the set WR exactly. And then I've heard some discussions back and forth. So here we go to the question. Which is more important, SWR or your actual radiation resistance?
My honest opinion is radiation resistance. And that's basically come from, you know, the conversations I've had with Dick Nadel about that subject. That if we brought onto this net, we would be here for 3 hours just on that, on that subject. But it would be pretty lively, to say the least. So I'm not so sure the world is quite ready for that. But anyway. My own personal opinion is that, you know, you try to be reasonable about it, but it comes down to this. If you can efficiently couple energy into the radiator with minimal resistance,
that means more of the energy is going to get into the ether, if you will, or come from the ether into your feed system. If, however, you go for SWR and ignore radiation resistance, you know, a poorly matched antenna, if it's got decent radiation resistance, will work fine. It's really more of a function of its overall capture area and things like that, that, and, you know, by extension, the radiation resistance that actually much more matter, or matter much more. So that's basically my general thought on it. It's not a very scientific answer, but it's kind of like a layman's understanding and explanation, if that makes sense. Anybody else want to take a crack at this?
W2JK.
Mr. Don, go right ahead.
Yeah, let's say you're feeding an antenna with coax. Tuna with the coax now. Let's say it's a 40-meter dipole. You might be able to crank around on that 40-meter dipole, get it to work around 20 meters, which would be normal off the wall. But you might get the 20 tuner to make it look good. Because you don't realize that you got to... It looks good SWR-wise for the tuner, and the transmitter sees a nice 50-ohm load, but you listen it all in the cable because of the high SWR going between the tuner and the dipole. So the same thing, too, with the dummy loaf. It has a beautiful SWR, but it doesn't radiate worth a dime. That story, too. Now, back to that, W2JEK.
Yeah, but I think... I seem to remember this whole conversation ends up being really centered around the efficiency of transferring energy into the ether. So if you really work it out, I think what happens is there's a trade-off between SWR and radiation resistance. But in general, high radiation resistance is not a happy thing. Whereas, so if you have a choice between that and high SWR, you're better off doing that, because what energy you do get into the feed point will relatively efficiently get into the ether. I think that's the whole point.
KD2ADC question.
Go right ahead.
Yeah, Gordon, just getting back to a lot of that the data that I took, I was wondering if you by any chance had an opportunity to look at that. Because I guess my understanding of radiation resistance isn't quite as good as I thought it was. But radiation resistance is that, I don't want to say it, relative to the resonant frequency of the antenna?
If I remember, I may be totally wrong here, so I got to be really careful. I don't want to give you wrong information. But I seem to recall listening to Dick that radiation resistance is not dominated by resonance. Now, he's maintained that you can have a non-resonant antenna. An antenna with a very high SWR, in fact, that will work fairly well, or unbelievably well, if it's got the right capture area, if it's got the, it can couple the energy from the ether into the transmission system. The issue comes with, as what people were alluding to, is what happens with the transmission system itself. So if you have a poor match at the feed point, then you can't correct, it's like you can't fix stupid. So you could have a non-resonant antenna that's made resonant at the feed point, and therefore have a 50 ohm load, or if you will, a perfect match down through the feed system to the transmitter or receiver. So that all can be worked out. So I think his point was to get the match at the feed point, even if the antenna itself was not resonant.
Okay, very good. That's a copy. Yeah, I don't know if you, by any chance, did you get that email I sent you?
I did, and it's been a few weeks since I read it, and that's why I'm going humming here.
Okay, that's a copy. Okay, if you look at some of the data, and I know this may help out other guys too, I hung the analyzer actually at the 4-to-1 balance and took measurements, and the feed point SWR at that point where it connects to the 50-ohm coax is pretty close to what I'm seeing at the end of the coax also. So that, I guess, would determine that the radiation resistance of the dipole is, I guess, good enough there. Go ahead.
I would think so, especially with a dipole. But, you know, we have lots of non-resonant antennas that we mess with that work well.
Yeah, that's a copy. Actually, I was listening to some guy from Indiana. He was QRP 8 watts, but he was putting it into a 750-foot long wire. And with that 8 watts, he was coming in at 20 over here.
Yeah, okay. That's good. Anybody else have comments they want to add?
I have one on radiation resistance.
Go ahead.
Okay. It's my understanding that if you have, for instance, a quarter wave out on the ground, vertical, and you don't have an adequate radio field or whatever, you'll get a nice SWR, but very low radiation resistance. A very similar thing would be when you're using a hamstick or one of those tunable antennas on the car. You'll get a beautiful SWR, but again, low radiation resistance. And as far as matching at the feed point, I had a CB antenna that I wanted to use on the net, and it was kind of a little bit far out of band, I guess, at 2350, 375. So Pete says, oh, it's no problem, just put a capacitor at the feed point. Then it matches all the way down. And is that what you were talking about?
Bingo, exactly. Yeah, it's a bingo, exactly.
Okay. So, the idea is that you should really go for radiation resistance, match it at the antenna, and if you have an SWR excursion. So that leads to the next question. It's my understanding, as long as your SWR on the feed line and you're using normal coax, you know, LMR 400, RG8X, even some of the better quality 58, as long as your SWR is 5-to-1 or less, you're not going to lose an appreciable amount in the feed line.
Well, let's talk about that. A 2-to-1 SWR is 100 ohms over 50, let's say. 50 ohm feed point looking, or 50 ohm, you know, source looking out, and it sees 100 ohms. That's 2-to-1. It could also be 25 ohms. Generally speaking, if you have a choice, and this is kind of what feeds into your point of what Peter was telling you, if you have a choice being at 25 ohms or 100 ohms, be at 100 ohms.
But I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about the radio signal goes up to the antenna, some gets radiated, and if your SWR is not matched, some of it bounces back down the wire. But it doesn't get lost. It doesn't get dissipated. It's some of the energy is used up in resistance to wire, but it hits your radio or your tuner or whatever you're using, and it goes back on up, and goes that back and forth. And so what the hypothesis that I read was, people worry too much about SWR because it, as long as the SWR, you know, 3-4-to-1, tune it out with a tuner, you're not going to lose much, 5%, 8%, not much in the line.
Yeah, okay. I'll accept that notion. That's good advice. Anybody else? Alrighty. Next question, Mr. Noel.
Oh, okay. Our friends at the Fairlawn Radio Amateur Emergency Services, FLARES, have this very nice contraption set up in the office. It's basically, I believe, a large sheet of aluminum with two connectors mounted in. And there's cables on the back, and each cable goes to a different antenna system. And they're very carefully labeled. And I think that's the top half. And in the bottom half, I believe, if I remember rightly, might have it backwards, is the radios inside. Actually, the cable going to radios. And there's one to each of the operating positions, or two or three, I don't remember which. I guess because you can have VHF and HF. And there's a few going over to the test bench. And when somebody wants to set up a radio, they talk to one of the people that are approved to play with those connectors. They walk in, and they jumper from the radio to the proper antenna, which is one way to do it. The other way to do it, a lot of hams seem to just put in switches and switch away. They'll have one radio and five antennas, or maybe they'll have, like, the MFJ has one. It was a 1799 that's got five in, and it's all in one big unit. It's got, like, 12 plugs on it, 12 coax plugs. One in, and then you can either put an amp or something in between, or you can just jumper from the output of one to the input of the other, and then five out. So you could put five antennas, five radios. Which would be more efficient? Would there be a lot of loss in the switch? Is there a lot of loss in adding those couple connectors in? What happens when you use right angle connectors? Perhaps going to the radio, coming in straight is not an option easily. So you throw a right angle connector on here and a connector there. Is there appreciable loss in those connectors? Is there appreciable loss in the switches? And if you're going to set up an optimal station, would you use switches or would you use the jumper cables like they do at Fairlawn?
Boy, that's a great question. And the true answer is, depending on your sophistication and your budget and your operational modes, maybe both.
Oh, wow.
But I had built a full... All right, so let's think about this. I, at one point, had the pleasure of having... Let me just change frequency here. I'm giving myself feedback. There we go. I had the ability to create, a coax for every port on the radios that I had and bring it back to a switch panel. And if you think about it, I had a Pro 2, a Pro 3, and a 746 Pro. At one point, I had a Pro 3 and 246 Pros. So I had a variety of different kinds of combinations, 2 meters, 6 meters, and HF. And so I wanted to have a matrix where I could flip things around. And I put all the necessary switches in, and you don't want to know how much, it involved in making dedicated jumpers and things like that among all the switches. But at the end of the day, it really did work out, and I was able to configure for whatever operation I wanted to do. But I found it was overly complex, and I had to think it through as to where I was. And then if I wanted to flip from antenna 1 to antenna 2 on a particular radio, I had to know how I was configured in order to do that. And it was, I had to, again, think it through all those switch matrices. And I said, this is stupid. This is crazy. So, and I was using, high-quality switches and such like that. So, but I had the ability to switch 2 meters around. I had the ability to switch, for sidebands and FM. I had the ability to switch 6 meters around. So you put two antennas on one radio or two antennas on two different radios that could operate SO2R on 6 or 2 meters. I did the same thing on HF. I mean, I could also keep one antenna on each of the radios, and do all sorts of odd things. It was nuts. So what I'm now in the process of setting up is a setup like what Paul has made for the stuff coming in, and then I will have shorter cables to a patch panel that's near the shack, so I can, or near the operating position, so I can set those things up that I want to. But I've also decided that I'm going to put some simple AB switches or ABC switches in, so that if I want to configure through a switch, I can. If I want to do the switch thing, sometimes you want a switch. If you're contesting, sometimes you want a physical switch that allows you to do that. So time will tell as to how it's going to shake out. But that's basically, the bottom line is I think the coax system is cheaper, it's more cost effective, it's also infinitely flexible. But I think you need to put an appearance on your panel for every radio port that you have. So your radio has two HF ports or HF 6-meter ports and one 2-meter port and UHF port, then you need to bring each one of those to the panel. Okay. And then if you need to mix the switch in after that, because the radio doesn't have multi port capability, that's fine. I mean, most of my radios have some form of multi port capability, but the Flex 5000 has three antenna ports. Actually, it's got more if you count the receiver ports, and that's kind of an interesting variant on the theme as well, which we can talk to another time. But there's that, and then there's also, but then there's the ICOM 7000, which has a 6-meter HF port and a 2-meter 440 port. So you have to, you might, in that case, the 2-meter 440 port, if you're sharing the radio for 2 meters 440, and you want to put it on, let's say, two Yagi arrays and switch back and forth between the two, you need a switch. So for that configuration, like during a contest, if that's what you're doing, you might want to put it on a switch. Whereas you probably don't want to do that for HF at 6 meters. But there, what you may want to do is have a HF port and a 6-meter vertical, let's say, if you're using that as it for 6FM while operating a 6-meter sideband opening, you want to keep an ear out on 6FM. So there again, you might want to flip between 10 meters vertical, 10 meters horizontal, and 6-meter vertical on, let's say, the 7000 while you're messing with the Flex 6 meters on sideband. It's just a thought. So that's a long answer, but I think the answer is use the jumper system.
Then, of course, you could just use two cables to a switch next to your operating position. If you happen to have a couple operating positions and one of the positions is 6 foot from the panel, and you could just, for instance, in my case, I could have the dipole and the beam. Because the dipole does 40, 15, 10. The beam does 20, 15, and 10. So what you're saying is I could switch between the two, or if I had a vertical, I could actually set it up with a three-pole switch so I could switch vertical, beam, or dipole. Is that what you're saying?
Sure. If your radio only has one HF port, then that would be a perfectly valid configuration. And, if your situation is relatively static and you can program for it, if you will, in the way you're describing, then that's fine. Go ahead and do that. It's when you don't have consistency, or you have a variety of operational requirements and modes depending on what you're doing, then you want to think it through a little bit.
Good. That's all the questions. One last question then. If you can't possibly get where the cables come in the window, because it's not physically possible, what would happen is if you just brought the cables in and put your input port, say, 2 foot from the window? Would that be poor practice with regards to the lightning protection?
You don't want the lightning coming in the house. You want to keep that electricity outside. That's a really... I'm glad you asked the question, because that is really, really critical. So let's back up a bit. In my shack, I have lightning arresters on a copper bulkhead, pardon me, a aluminum bulkhead, very much like what Paul has set up inside the entry point of the Fairlawn Club. But what I've done instead is I've done it right on the wall as it comes in, and it's got a big honking piece of cable, or several of them, that go down the tower leg to a ground rod field at the base of the tower, right off that plate. So that whatever electricity I have is charged as close to the entry point as possible, preferably on the outside. Having said that, I then run cable across the ham shack to where I'm going to have the equivalent panel of what you see at Fairlawn, except without the benefit of the lightning arresters inside the room that is there at the entry point on the other wall. My ham shack is the operating position is across the room. I'm sorry, it's across the room from the entry point. So lightning stops at the wall, at the entry wall, hopefully, and then it comes down. Then I have dedicated a piece of coax to mirror that to what's going to be a jack field, like you saw at Fairlawn, except their jack field is based on lightning arresters on one side. Mine will just be based on feeders.
Sounds good. That was enough questions for one day. And to Julio.
All righty. Very good. No more questions? Anybody else want to comment on this?
Alrighty. Well,
as I said, if anybody has any questions regarding arrangements for Steve, please email me at w2tangotangotango@arrl.net, and I'll be happy to forward to you the information that I was sent by Barra on the subject. As far as off-center fed dipole, which we've touched on a couple of times tonight, I would like to point out that Jim, I don't know who else went with him, but K2ZO went over to W2PNE's house, Mr. Ted, and starting with a tree branch that I selected for their use, and they threw three lines across three points on the along the back line of his property at about 55 or more feet, and he now has a off-center fed dipole that's just outstanding. I mean, just outstanding, way up in the air. And the best part is not only are the ends supported, but the feed point is supported. There was a tree branch right where it needed to be for the support of the feed, so it just doesn't get any better than that. And Ted's having a ball with it too. I took very good note of your point about the 40% solution, I'll call it. That's very interesting, Mr. Noel. And I will keep that in mind for my own use. Ted is having a little trouble because the antenna is not ice, you know, not resonant with, but he doesn't have any kind of choke on the circuit. So I think what he needs to think about is put a line isolator outside his ham shack. It's above 500 watts. He's getting some RFI to his own computer, to the computer attached to a transceiver, but not to anything else. The fact that the antenna is way, way far away and everything is going to have to be collecting by department overall, except for what's directly fed down the coax. Alrighty, anybody else?
IR, late check-in.
K2EIR, go right ahead.
Checking in, Gordon. I've got to change the battery on this handy talkie, or I'll lose it. K2EIR.
Okay, Howie, very good. You're welcome to make a comment if you'd like.
I just joined you. I had other things here with the family, so I couldn't follow it. Thank you. K2EIR.
You're duly logged in. No problem. Alrighty. Anybody else with comments, questions, topics?
If you want the descriptive items with the antenna analyzer, which seems to be 68 pages of charts, I'll be happy to forward them to your email address.
Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead. I mean, I love reading assignments, Smith charts and the like. I live for this.
Well, I tried to made the mistake of trying to print it out, and each cell expanded in the Excel spreadsheet, and it was horrendous. And I was going to have, I don't know how many hundred pages, so I stopped it right then and there. But it was really interesting to see at the various, the guy set it up to start at one end, started at 1% of the antenna was to one side and 99% to the other, and he set up the analyzer to go in 1% increment until he reached 50%, because of course it would be the same going the other way. And that's what he printed out. And then he had favorable radiation resistance and SWRs come shade out in green as part of his thing. And when it was, and then he set up his bands, and of course he did it for each of the bands and put it together. So you could see at about the 40% point, all the bands were reasonable. So I'm going to send that over to you. Anybody else who wants one, I'll send you a copy to it. It's the description written by the author and a one heck of an Excel spreadsheet. Into a yuck.
Okay, very good. And I'll forward it on to whoever will request it. Not a problem. Very good. Anything else that people would like to talk about? Oh, just a reminder that Steve's wake is tomorrow afternoon in Oradell at the Walter B. Walter Breslaylian Funeral Home in Oradell on Kindercomack Road. And he's also being waked on Saturday evening. So Friday afternoon, Saturday evening, and then funeral is sometime on Sunday, and I can forward those arrangements to you as well, if anybody has an interest. Just FYI, my email is whiskey2tango@arrl.net. That's the easiest way to get a hold of me. Alrighty. Any last comments? Well, I do ask that you say a prayer for Steve and for Steve's family. And, it's sad, but let's celebrate the fact that this man was, you know, one of those, you know, why not kind of ideas when Steve was presented with it, another idea of, yeah, Barry could do one more thing. You're going to do it? Great. Super. Take it away. And, you know, we have a cast of characters here who make this net lively week after week, and I appreciate it. And we are into our sixth year. And, someone asked me, if anyone just struck me a couple of months ago and said, how many years ago you start the tech night? It would say about 3 years, 3.5 years ago. And We're into six, so go figure. Well, thanks everybody for your participation. And I'd like to thank the Chestnut Ridge Radio Club for the use of their repeater. And thank you all for your interest. And we'll see you next week on the net. This is K2BAR, W2TTT, returning the repeater to normal amateur radio use.